Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and I live in Wichita, Kansas. I am a Patreon supporter for Creative Control. I discovered Creative Control some years ago, I think maybe while looking for interviews with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. And I stumbled across this conversation that Vish had with Tommy Stinson that was really insightful. Vish held his own. I think Tommy can be a little bit of a difficult interview at times. And it went really well, and it really got into some areas that I wasn't expecting. And I thought, gosh, I have to listen to more of this guy and his podcast. Yeah, sometimes I'm not necessarily a fan of the music or musicians that Vish will have on the show, but I always appreciate their creative process a little bit more. And more times than not, though, it does lead me to finding a new musical artist that I'm interested in, or to think a little bit differently about maybe some artists whose work I've overlooked. So, you know, go ahead, and if you've been waiting at all to support Vish and Creative Control, now is probably the best time to do it. I know as a public radio employee here in Kansas, listener-supported broadcasting, whether it's podcasts or radio itself, really isn't a thing of the past. It's actually very much a thing of both the present and the future. So, yay Vish, yay Creative Control.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Rows of clover cover up a season's worth of wasted dirt. Rye will tie the dough to feed. Ring of cedar standing there. Buckshot barrel, steady hands. Plunder through the flattened land. Barrels burn, the ashes all, baskets stockpiled in the hall.
H.C. McIntyre is a tremendously gifted poet, singer, producer, musician, and songwriter based in her home state of North Carolina. A member of the folk band Mount Moriah, McIntyre has established herself as one of America's greatest and most astute lyricists to emerge in the last decade. Her third album is a stunning and contemplative one called Every Acre and will be released by Merge Records on January 27th, 2023. HC and I connected recently for a revealing talk about things like her current home in Durham, North Carolina, and her upbringing in the state's foothills, how college radio and bands like Cedar Kinney changed her life and got her playing guitar, growing up a jock and then getting into poetry that now influences her songwriting, why Every Acre examines how the lands of indigenous and BIPOC peoples have been stolen, and also what's in a name, her collaborators on this new record, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations to sustain this podcast at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 746 of Creative Control, featuring the brilliant and kind H.C. McIntyre with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, HC. How's it going?
Hey, Vish. It's going well. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you very much for asking. Where in the world are you today?
I am in outside of Durham, North Carolina. So, yeah, in between Durham and this little town called Hillsboro. So,
is that
right in the middle? Long, kind of in the middle of the state.
In the middle of the two places. So where is that in relation to like Carrboro or Chapel Hill or
just
something?
A spitting distance, right?
Yeah. I love that area.
It's all the same, you know.
Okay, I quite love that area. In fact, I believe as we're speaking, was it today or yesterday? There was some sort of commemoration of Elizabeth Cotton. I kept seeing pop up on the internet, and I forgot to look at what it was exactly. But she's from, I discovered on a tour once, the band I was road managing, every night would play Freight Train by Elizabeth Cotton. And then they kind of stopped doing right around when we got to North Carolina. And then they decided randomly to bring it back in Carrboro, and someone from the audience yelled, "She's from here!" And we had no idea. And
really?
Like the singer was like, "What? Oh my God! He's been playing this song forever." Is that accurate? She's Elizabeth Cotton's from that era. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're probably at like the Cat's Cradle, which is right across the train tracks from where she wrote Freight Train.
Well, we were actually that particular show. We did a couple in that area, as I recall. This is going back to the October of 2000. I think we were actually in Carrboro. Is there any kind of music venue? Would there be venues there? Yeah,
that would be the Cat's Cradle. Yeah.
Oh, that's in Carrboro? I thought that was more Chapel Hill.
You know, it depends on who you ask, me, but technically it's in Carrboro, right on the railroad line that she grew up.
I only clarify this for the record. Not that anyone cares, but we visited the Cat's Cradle, but the show they played was not there, because the Cat's Cradle is like in kind of like a plaza or something, right? Like almost like a strip mall, right? Yeah. I remember that. We were there just to check it out because I'd heard so much about the venue. Mm-hmm. But no, the band they're called Royal City, and they were smaller at the time and whatever. Anyway, we were definitely playing somewhere in Carrboro proper, I think.
Was it the Nightlight?
See, I'll have to look through the archives of my... I found it on the internet archives. I found our whole... Someone in the band was asking me about those dates because it was very fortuitous. We met Sufjan Stevens and became friends with him there. We found Big Pink, which was a big deal to some of us when we were in New York. I randomly jammed with the now disgraced Ryan Adams in his basement, and I didn't know really who he was. They were like, Whiskey Town. You know Whiskey Town? I'm like, no, I don't really know what that is. Anyway, all this stuff happened. So we were, in my friend's case, he was like, I met my now wife on that trip. Do you remember when we played Brooklyn? So I had to go digging through the internet. Anyway, all this to say, I will email you later.
Okay.
And tell you exactly where we played when we were in North Carolina. It is lovely to have you on this show. I'm a big fan, and I love your new record so much, and I can't wait to talk about it. I usually do in terms of a time and space and place thing is ask people how they relate to where they are. So now that I've told you all about my relationship with that area, how long have you been in Durham and in North Carolina?
Well, I've been in like the Triangle area, like Durham, Carrboro, Chapel Hill, since 2003.
I see.
So quite a while. And, you know, moved around to different little boroughs and nooks and stuff. And before that, I went to school at UNC Wilmington, which is on the coast.
Okay.
And I grew up in the mountains, a little town in the mountains. So kind of just, yeah, big tour of North Carolina.
So no, okay. You're North Carolina all the way through, though, throughout your entire... Okay,
yeah,
that's your...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you moved, mm-hmm. It sounds like you moved from the mountains to attend school and then kind of stayed. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's right. That was, I attended school. It was the furthest public school I could get to, furthest away from where I grew up. And then just applied for a job in Chapel Hill.
I
knew the music scene, but like didn't really, like I wasn't into indie music, so to speak, but just kind of took a chance and here I am.
Nice. You just invoked something called the Triangle, and my memory takes me back to us getting lost trying to navigate that area, because I think I was driving, I did something dumb. Do people often get lost in that Triangle? I have this sense memory of people being like, yeah, it's not unusual that people, it's like the Bermuda Triangle almost. Am I, were we Canadian idiots?
I wasn't going to say it, but I mean, I get lost.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'd say. People
get turned around.
Yeah, but yeah, we're kind of, the pace is pretty slow here, so.
Right.
Yeah.
That is interesting. So you weren't into indie rock per se. Did you have music in your life growing up? In the mountains. You also just said you got to a school that was as far away as possible from where you came up. Is that what you said? Did I get that right?
Yeah. I sure did. I'm being as honest as possible with you.
So that was purposeful. You wanted to get out of where you were.
It was. I grew up in the foothills, in between Asheville and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Small town. Grew up on a family farm and very religious family. And I needed to kind of see who I was outside of that community. And so 6 hours did it, 6 hours to the coast.
So, how old were you when you did this?
I was 17.
Oh, okay.
This is when I went to college, yeah.
College. Sorry. For some reason, I thought you said public school, and I thought you meant like grade school, and you just were like, I got to get away.
Mm-hmm.
Given how you just described things, did you get along well with your own family, or was it the community that you were really running away from?
Mm. No, I got along. I mean, it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody. There's like one blinking light, and maybe there's two now. you know, and it was a small school, and I was really involved in school, like sports, and so I was kind of like the kid who grew up in the country but went to the city school. And so it was more of like I needed to grow as a person and just step out of my identity. All my family lives on one road. And you know, and just, So.
Okay. I understand that you're coming of age, and I know from my own experience, and I've talked to other people who come up in devout households, whatever their religious affiliation might be, or households where they don't, as the child, you don't feel like you're getting a clear picture of what the information in the world really is. I find myself, I found myself questioning. My parents immigrated from India, and they often talked about how great India was. And I'd say, well, why did you move? And they didn't have a really good answer. They didn't have an answer for how India could be the greatest place in the world. We left, which I always found confusing. Or I came up as a drummer, and I got there because I would tap on my knees on drives to visit my my mother's brothers and sisters in about an hour outside of Toronto. And I would tap on my knees, and they'd say, you can't, like, to the music that was playing in the car, and say, you can't do that. That's a harbinger of death. I'd say, what? Why, how, why is that? And they couldn't give me the answers. All this to say, I think that drew me to punk and questioning, questioning things and becoming sort of my own person. Does any of that resonate with you and what you went through?
Totally. And that, and punk was like the first, so that was like the first bit of underground music that I discovered. And the only reason I discovered it, you know, I was, I grew up on FM country. And like whatever, like CB scanners, you know, not a lot of options besides like the church and hymns and stuff. But when I went to college, I just kind of happened to walk in to like a meeting for a meetup for the radio station there, the college radio station. And I kind of went to the wrong room. So it just... I don't know. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I can be a DJ? Wow, that sounds, you know. And then, like, my world just opened up. Because it was, I became really involved with the station. I was, like, the librarian and program director. And, I mean, that, yeah, that's how I learned about independent music. But particularly... I discovered Sleater-Kinney and like Team Dresh at the time when I needed them most, you know, and was just like, wow, I didn't know, you know, like I didn't know women could be this emotional, like, you know, like we can, you know, it blew my mind. And it was exactly... It was exactly what I needed, and that's why I learned how to play. That's why I started learning how to play guitar, to Sleater-Kinney songs.
Yeah. So this is roughly the mid to late 90s or something?
Yeah, 99. Mm-hmm. 99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's around when I did you ever see the band live? Mm-hmm. In their original? Yeah. Was that live? Yeah, I got to see them a couple of times too. Actually, the first time I saw them in Toronto, the White Stripes opened. Yeah, and no one knew who they were, and they were fine. I like Sleater anymore. So yeah, I got into them a lot too. I was going to ask, like, did you say you became the program director at that radio station at some point?
Yeah, I worked there. Yeah, for 3 years. Yeah.
So you were all in. It wasn't just a flight of fancy. You were hooked.
You know what it was? It was like a sub community, because that's where I met a lot of my friends who are still some of my best friends today, because we were at this public beach school, you know, university, and we're kind of misfits in a way, you know, like you could tell the kind of like artsy kids, you could just tell we found our own. And so this was like a refuge for me, was going into the radio station in between classes. It was just like a hangout spot, and where I couldn't wait for the promos to come in. And yeah, and I've worked in record stores a lot too. It's just, I mean, discovering music was life-changing, discovering like outside the box music.
Well, the thing about what you're describing, and I think myself, I had the exact same experiences going to record stores, going to the community radio or college or community radio station. You discover and become a part of a community very quickly, that because all of those things then are gateways into going to shows. And then if you keep going to shows, you run into people. I don't need to explain how people become friends, but, but those things are hugely important, because, I found listening to any kind of underground radio or records to be a pretty solitary thing, to do. It was exciting for me. And that's how I got into music, was just listening to it by myself. But then to discover that you're not alone with it, because it seems to me that you were whatever among the things you were probably fleeing in the foot from the foothills was isolation and alienation, right?
Yeah, I think it became pretty apparent that, like, I just got really burnt out on sports. I was a jock, and like, there wasn't a lot to do where I grew up, and just competitive sports, I just kind of hit that wall. And I started, when I was 11th, 12th grade, I started reading poetry and, writing poetry and just discovering this other part of me that I was kind of surprised was there. And I wanted to nurture that. And so, yeah, it was given that part of me like a chance to grow. And I was also, it was a conservative small town, and I was realizing that my belief systems were incongruent with what was around me, and including like sexuality. I was discovering my sexuality and politics, and so yeah, I had to move across the state.
Yeah, I see. So it's not just finding your people, it's finding yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think all those people were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You're 17, 18, 19. What it was like an environment that allowed you to be who you were becoming.
It's a hugely formative time, and I think it's why some of us, maybe myself included, I wrestle with this sometimes with my areas of interest and the guests I have on this show, because I have some friends who are like, really, you're talking to Superchunk and Pavement still? And I'm like, yeah, we're all still doing stuff. Why wouldn't I? Of course I want to talk to them. But I think the connotation is like, didn't you like them when you were 17? I'm like, yeah. They're a big part of me. All of these things are, I like new things too, and younger bands too, but I have a loyalty to the things that are foundational for me.
And they're still putting out music.
My God, that last Superchunk record is one of my favorite records of last year. Absolutely. Of 2022, that Wild Loneliness. I told Mac this, I gushed. I love it. I think they're fantastic. I always have. Before we move on to the poetry, because I'm very intrigued by your interest in it, I've been very struck, not only listening to the new album, but actually reading the lyrics. I'm very struck by your gifts as a poet, but I would be remiss if I didn't talk to you a little bit about being a jock and the sports that you enjoyed, because I've had personally, in high school, I was adequate at sports, coordinated enough that I could do it, but I had an effort problem. But at some point, beyond all that stuff, I just separated myself from my jock friends to hang out more with the weirdo art friends, and then started playing music. There's something about the cohort of, like, I had my good friends, and when they're jock friends, I didn't like, for typical reasons, almost stereotypical reasons. The jocks are in a small conservative town, often share some attributes. Let's just put it that way. Right. And I didn't go for it. Anyway, I really, have come full circle, and I do love watching sports. I play sports with my son, much more accurate and better basketball player now at 45 than I was mm-hmm. in high school. So I love it on the one hand, and I've reconciled what it means to be into weirdo art and sports. What sports did you play in high school, and what was it about sports where you were like, I hit a wall, I don't want to do this anymore? Can you talk about this a little bit?
Sure, yeah. From like 4 or 5 years old, I played soccer and basketball. Those were my two. Those are the two things that I pursued.
That's the same. That's the same as me. I was on organized soccer and organized basketball.
What position in soccer?
I usually played midfield or forward, but there was one game I had to play goalie. It was one of those, when you're a kid, they're like, everyone gets a turn playing goalie. And you're like, all right, I'll try to play goalie. I remember I played goalie for a half, and then I scored a really pathetic goal in the second half. Like, they took me out, and then I scored a goal. I remember that. I'm getting sentimental about my soccer time. But yeah, I think that's right. Midfield forward, usually.
Uh-huh.
What about you?
Yeah. I was a left midfield because okay. I was left-footed, as they say.
Yep.
And, yeah, I mean, I think what led to the burnout, you know, like I said, I'm grateful for those experiences. I think it taught me a lot, and it helped me communicate with other people and learn a lot about just my own endurance and capabilities. This is like as a human being.
Yeah.
But I was doing it year round, you know, like yeah. When I was in high school, I was on club teams, I was on AAU teams, and for both soccer and basketball. And
so you were good. You were like really good at it.
I wasn't bad.
No, if you're on those, I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable, but if you're on those kinds of teams, that's a higher tier of, I'm just, you know, shooting around with my friends or something. You were good.
Yeah.
I'll say it for you if you don't want to admit it. I think you must have been pretty good.
Okay. I was, and I loved it, and it was the thing I knew how to do, and it became apparent that I could go to college doing this, and I don't know, that's when I kind of was just like, I'm tired.
Yeah. It's exhausting. You know, it occupies all your mental energy. People assume it's just the game, but it's the practicing. And then you're thinking about it outside of that, and you're probably like training outside. Ugh. It's exhausting, isn't it?
It is. And you know what was great is when I stopped playing competitive sports, I became obsessed with running.
Yeah.
Which still is like a mental health everyday kind of.
Yeah.
For me. And so I think I needed to separate those two and think of, you know, because when you're, I don't know, when you're on teams in high school and you're like, oh, sprinting, you just kind of roll your eyes and it's just like, oh God, I don't want to run. But then, like, I want to run. That's how I'm working some stuff out in my head,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
as a young adult, so.
If you're even moderately athletic in high school, in Canada anyway, you will end up on the track team. did you do any track and field?
I may have showed up for like the first. I think maybe it conflicted with some schedules or something like that.
So I did high jump. Then they would get me to do the odd long distance running, but I couldn't do it very well. I remember just being thrust into that. Can you run the anchor? I'm like, me? I don't know. I can't run. Are you nuts? Yeah. But I did it. Maybe someone bailed. I don't want to get much more personal, but I'm 6'2". You're sitting and on a computer screen. May I ask, how tall are you, basketball playing, soccer playing, superstar, H.C. McIntyre?
Not at 5'7".
Oh, wow. You're okay.
At best. You know, I grew, I think, like 4 inches in high school in 1 year. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty tall. That's not short. That's 5'7". That's good.
With cowboy boots, I'm 5'7".
You wear cowboy boots on the basketball court sometimes just to see what would happen.
You know, I haven't. It's interesting. I haven't like touched a basketball in so long, or kicked a soccer ball. It's like, I don't know, but I would. Yeah, I'd wear.
I think the gauntlet has been thrown down. If you and I are ever in the same space, we have to go 1-on-1.
Yeah.
Or 21 something. Give it a go. No, I like that. I hear, just so we're clear, I hear this a lot from the musicians I talk to. They have some sports background, and I don't want to be too heavy-handed about it, but I sometimes think that background can inform how you work in a band or work with others.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, the team dynamics.
Totally.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's collaboration.
Yeah.
In a different, obviously different form, different pressure, but yeah, that would be an interesting study, you know?
I think like, they're completely connected, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know. As parents, we have these opportunities afforded to us to our children to go play soccer, play hockey, join the, be in the high school band, you know, trying to give them a well-rounded view of the world and give them skills. But I do think they're all pretty interconnected. If you really think about it, it's often a lot of like, try not to be a social outcast. try to work with others. A lot of the activities are working well with others, you know? So I do think there's some connections there. I don't think the competitive stuff can come up too. I don't know if that's ever reared its head for you. Do you still, are you ever like playing a show or looking at the charts and like, oh, I'm going to go, my record's going to do better than so-and-so. I can't wait to beat them. No, you probably don't do
that. Oh, those charts. No, I'm really not a competitive person. And I think that's why maybe now I do the individual sports. But, you know, I have worked with a lot of different folks, yeah. A lot of different personalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you say you do individuals? So do you do some sort of athletic stuff now? You do the running, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love to run. I run every day and do like, I wouldn't call it yoga.
Yeah.
It's like stretching.
Yep.
It's I don't know what it technically is, but it's like elongated stretching time.
Meditative stretching?
Yeah, I put on an earth record and then just stretch. And I do some like little bit of weightlifting.
Yeah, I had to get some recently. And I, again, the anti-jock voice in the back of my head is, what are you doing? You're buying dumbbells? But it was because I was talking to someone about how my shoulders have been bothering me. And we figured out it's because of the mousing, the computer mousing. So to come 180, I've become a total nerd. And do lots of computer things. And now they're like, hit the gym, nerd. You need to be stronger to do your computing. And I was like, oh, okay. And I bought these newfangled dumbbells that I'd never heard about before where they have discs and you twist the... You know about this? Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen this? You twist...
Yeah.
And the weights are all there and then you twist the bar and... what is that? The bell? No, that's the...
You can like adjust.
Yeah.
You can adjust the weight. You
know? Yeah. In my day, you had the weight when I was younger. You put the weights on with a clamp. Mm. And if you didn't do it right, they'd fall on your toe.
Right. I think this is like the shark tank thing.
Oh, is it a newer invention? Maybe.
I think so.
Anyway, that's what...
I think so.
It's interesting as you get older. What I'm getting at, I think, is as you get older, the things you compartmentalized as maybe negative as a kid... sports, after devoting, in your case, so much, in my case too, devoting so much time to it, then deciding I reject that. As you get older, you come full circle and you realize, well, there's something to that. There was something to that fitness. Anyway, thank you for taking us down this trip down memory lane. I'm not quite done because you said a couple of things about getting into guitar and poetry. And I want to touch upon the poetry in a moment. The guitar playing... let's focus on Every Acre. Wonderful guitar playing on this record. The solos are you responsible for a lot of the soloing on this record?
Not at all.
No. Okay.
No, that is Luke Norton, who I've been playing with for a few years now. That's him just in his power.
Ripping. Just ripping, shredding.
He is ripping. Yeah. I mean, he's an incredible musician, incredible guitarist, and I feel really lucky to play with him, with all my bandmates. Yeah, no solos here for me.
Are you capable? Are you capable of soloing?
Yeah. It's been a long time since I have. I used to play punk music and kind of in like a 2-piece band, yeah. or a 3-piece sometimes, and I was the only guitarist. So I started out in playing really fast, complicated, mathy rock,
yeah,
punk rock, and yeah, now I'm more of like the rhythm guitar, and I'm really cool with that.
No, it's a wonderful dynamic. It's got a real groove in some places. This new record, I really enjoy it. I only wanted to highlight the soloing and all Prost to Luke, but I mean, for me, the obvious touchstone for some of the guitar playing may be Neil Young. In Crazy Horse, but I also picked up on more like, I feel like Jeff Tweedy doesn't get enough due. I know Nels Klein and Wilco gets a lot of credit, but I picked up on some. Is Luke a fan of either Neil Young or Wilco in any regard?
I know he's a fan of Neil Young because I know that's like where we all come together, but I don't know Wilco. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Just wondering. It really, some of the guitar peeling, the way that the guitars sort of just peel forth. Reminds me certainly of like a Ghost Is Born era, like almost tonally. It's interesting that you're not familiar with them because it's, if I may, as a fan of theirs and yours, I feel a connection there. So anyway, that's a bit of a side note. I assume you get into guitar playing after hearing Sleater-Kinney and other bands. What was your progress like there? Did it take a while for you to get it or did it come to you easily?
This is like right, I think 99. I think the internet had just kind of kicked off where I was. Mm-hmm. And I just would print out guitar tabs and try over and over and over again. So I just taught myself, you know. And the hardest thing for me was actually rhythm.
Yeah.
And then singing with rhythm, you know, it's like, you know, it was something that was challenging me. You know, I had been good at, you know, being a jock for a long time. And this was a whole different way of using my body and just physiologically. And it's kind of all I did. I was pretty obsessed when I first got a guitar and started learning how to play.
I still, when I pick up a guitar instinctually, not as much anymore, but I still sometimes play the earliest songs I learned how to play by others.
What was that?
Well, the very first thing I ever learned, I told the story before, I think the very first thing I ever learned to play on guitar was Come As You Are by Nirvana. And it was because it was just so, I struggled with it. And then when I got it, it was so revelatory and humanizing. Oh, I mean, I was obviously just copying someone else's idea at that time, but like it's accessible. You can kind of do it. That's just when I happened to be playing guitar, and it progressed from there to trying to learn their songs, probably some Beatles songs, whatever was kind of cool to me and my friends at the time, Sloan, Superchunk, you know, Sonic Youth, these sorts of things, Fugazi, the things I still love. That's usually my instinct there. But is that not your experience, or have you jettisoned all of that tablature? Is it out of your mind?
I definitely don't look at tablature, and I'm not. You know, I think once I got like some basic chords down, I kind of just and got into punk music, I just discovered my own chords.
For sure, yeah.
You know, I'm not, I collaborate with a lot of folks who are learned and have studied composition and theory, but I'm just self-taught. And yeah, so that was my experience. Is the first song I learned how to play, I think it was Angie by the Rolling Stones.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I love the Stones. I love the Stones as well at that time and still do. So that's an interesting choice.
Maybe Mazzy Star, Fade Into You.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's a classic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
also remember, feeling good when someone was like, hey, you want to learn how to play Satisfaction? I was like, oh, yeah, I do want to learn that. And it was super straightforward. I'm like, man, like, that's the thing. It was all relatively easy to do once you got the hang of the instrument. And I'm self-taught on the drums, like, never had any lessons. So I did take a guitar class in high school, classical guitar class, but we all kind of just goofed around and tried to learn AC/DC songs or whatever we were into at the time. Well, I don't, again, mean to draw too fine line to this, but often when people talk about sports, if things are going well for a player, they'll say they're in rhythm. They've got a feel today. Or if you watch Klay Thompson just bombing, it's because he doesn't have it that day. He doesn't have the rhythm and the feel and the touch of the game that he usually does. I always find it interesting that as a musician, if I'm on tour, I might have an off night sometimes. Like, I just can't. One night I can do a thing. I'm like, wow, I can't believe that fill I was able to do. That came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, I'm like, I can barely play the goddamn song all of a sudden. Yeah. So there's a human element to it. But I would argue that given some of the sports you played, you were maybe not realizing that you were in rhythm, you know, to play basketball a certain way, or soccer even a certain way. There's a certain flow to the game that, man, this is really a dumb theory that I'm positing right now. But I do think there's some connection to that. The feeling of playing music, or the feeling of being in the game and focused on it. Does that resonate with you at all? Yeah,
like you're in stride. There's a lot of different ways to put it, but yeah, all the cylinders are firing.
Yeah.
As my Uncle David would say.
Yeah. And it's very much about the zone you're in as a musician or an athlete.
In the zone, right.
The zone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, we're using athletic terms and I don't feel that bad about it. I want to read people some lyrics from your new record. Is that permissible?
Oh, sure.
I want to begin with Rose of Clover. I just want to read a little bit because I find it very striking. Here's how the song begins, and I'll get us to the chorus. Rose of Clover, cover up a season's worth of wasted dirt. Rye will tie the doe to fear, the ring of cedars standing there. Buckshot barrel, steady hands, plunder through the flattened land. Barrels burn to ashes all, the baskets stockpiled in the hall. It ain't the easy kind of healing when you're down on your knees clawing at the garden. I just wanted to read that because I was very struck by that song in particular and a lot of your lyrics, which are just so beautifully poetic. So I want to get to this poetry thing. It's not what I'm getting at, too. It's not conventional songcraft. And I gather that you also maybe feel like you're oscillating between the poetic and the lyrical as a musician. What is your relationship to poetry? Again, I don't mean to embarrass you, but it's a very beautiful and unusual approach to songwriting is what I pick up on from you. What is your entry point into songwriting? It seems to me to be poetry. Is that, first of all, fair?
Yeah, it's not embarrassing at all. I mean, it honestly feels really good when I think folks kind of see that, you know? I feel seen. Because I would not be in music, and I certainly wouldn't be a songwriter if I didn't first fall in love with poetry and the written language and just the movements, the nuances of the cadence, the rhythm. I became a creative writing major.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I would say it's probably my favorite thing to do as a songwriter. It's something I take really seriously, and it's really, you know, it can be really hard, but it to me, it's very fulfilling. And they're very similar, you know, like a poem, a song, a lyrics of a song. You know, there's the rhythmic quality, there's the epigrammatic component, but there's so many twists and turns you can, you know, with your voice. And I don't know, I really push myself lyrically. Like, I have a pretty high standard for, like, what essentially gets published and associated with a song. Maybe it's all the workshopping I did in undergrad, but I don't know. It's something that I listen for in other musicians, like other musicians too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always reading.
Yeah. There's nothing, you know, it's maybe trite to say that it sounds effortless, because I hear and see the effort you've put into this, the work. And I also can't help but wonder if this is a sort of a natural decision to kind of, present songs in a somewhat unconventional way, if you will, or mm-hmm. if it's just the way these things come out of you, because you'll get to earlier I suggested you oscillate between poetry and songwriting. Is that incorrect? Mm-hmm. Because I do think they're very connected. The songwriters I love the most mm-hmm. are singing poetry to me, I think. Do you see a distinction between the two, or do you think they're pretty much the same?
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier today. I think there's an overlap. I think for me, just because, you know, music has been like my career thus far, all of my words have been kind of funneled into the like lyric song folder.
Yes.
You know? Yes. But, you know, what's interesting is I've been asked to do some different composition work for like lit mags, and I'm so excited about that. You know, it's like a part of, you know, like I'm writing something this weekend that they want a poem and they want me to write it, and they want it on Monday, and they want me to write with in my handwriting, and like, I don't know, I just feel like that feels awesome.
Yeah,
you know, and it does feel different. Because, I don't know, with poetry, you have, as a reader, you're not hearing the voice behind it, right? Actually hearing the voice behind it. And so there's a little bit more of, I don't know, there's some nuance that can happen in songwriting that is exciting to me,
yeah.
Like vocally. And I also know that I sing pretty uniquely. I'm Southern, and I don't know. I was producing with this fella. He's from Chicago, and I was doing some co-writing, and you know, he was trying to. He was like, "Okay, now walk me through. Now, how do you say that? When do I make that turn?" You know, I was like, "Oh no, you just leave the G off. Leave the G off everything for one." You know, but like syllables are our friend.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you view like, yeah, I appreciate, like, again, it's an interesting point you're raising, because listening to you sing these words, I am transported to I don't think they fall easily into country or folk traditions, but that's where my ear is attuned to. But then actually listening to what you're saying and then reading it in particular, reading it dry without the music playing is a totally different experience, I will say.
Mm.
And I think that's a really unique place for an artist like you to have. Not everyone has that.
Mm-hmm.
And within I think there's a certain purposeful substance to this batch of songs in particular. And before I try to clumsily approximate what that might be in an overarching sense, can you do that? Can you talk about maybe what inspired these songs? I get a sense of it from even just the one thing I will point to right now is that you suggest this album was written and recorded on traditional territory of various peoples, and you cite them all. And then there's also something here in the credits about how a list of resources for North Carolina-based land reclamation initiatives, conservation efforts, and ways to donate can be found on my website, hcmcintyre.com. This gives the record to me a particular context. Then as I delve into what you're singing about, I'm like, oh, I see, personally, I can see where the through line between all of this. So I've asked you a leading question. I'm sorry, HC. What do you make of what I'm saying? Can you, in an overarching sense, talk about what might have inspired the actual content of these songs?
Yeah. You know, Every Acre. It's a line. I took it from a line of a song, Turpentine, when I was trying to figure out, well, what are they, you know? And I love the power of how simple it was, but how it could, I don't know. There, it's also like really transformative. Like personally, like I was living, I had been living by the Eno River in the same farmhouse on the same land for like over nine years. And it was it still is a big part of my identity. And it's where I grew up. So, you know, as an artist and like creatively, it's the most inspiring place I've been. And then I had to leave. And I want to be diplomatic about that. In doing so, I started thinking about land in terms of ownership. In terms of property lines, in terms of what does it mean to really own something? And okay, this person's last name that maybe he got from his father. who had that? You know, whose land is this?
Yeah,
like that became just like a deeper dive for me. And you know, it was uncomfortable, some of the things that I was finding. But, you know, that's part of the accountability, is like, you know, wanting to, I don't know, there's a thin line, you know, like wanting to draw attention and say, hey, you know, I, on this level, mine happens to be like a class level, not... Yeah. I'm identifying with this group of people, but I've wanted to be really mindful of how I talk about it, because it's not my story, you know, like, the native people and people of color, around the Eno River. And just like, I decided to put that in the liner notes as a way, of maybe, I guess it worked because you kind of see the thread, you know. But the songs definitely come from a place trying to understand ownership and the power dynamics around that, class, and learning. Really learning about where I've been living, you know?
Yeah.
So that, I mean, it became a real passion of mine, and I wanted to do it gracefully and respectfully and accurately. And so I reached out to different, Native organizations in the area here, and was just like, Hey, cold email. How do I write a land acknowledgement?
Yeah.
And I know it's weird to even ask you, like, what, looking for guidance, you know, like,
is this unusual in your sphere? Because I didn't mean to interject, but here in Canada, we've really had a reckoning. We now talk a lot more about the genocide of indigenous peoples in this country and how we stole all their land.
And yeah, why? See, Yeah, why couldn't I just say that?
Well, but what I'm asking, though, is that, no, that's fine. I think you articulated yourself very well. We talk mm-hmm. about it a lot. I can't attend any event virtually or in person now without mm-hmm. there being a land acknowledgement. There are little symbolic gestures. It's mm-hmm. never enough, but there's things that have, mm-hmm. we talk about them all the time now to make sure that it's not lost, to acknowledge mm-hmm. what has been done and not just shove it into the dustbin of history. What I was going to ask, though, mm-hmm. I haven't encountered too many artists outside of Canada doing this, mm-hmm. or happenings that I've observed and that take place in America where someone takes a moment to do a land acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Although, now that I think about it, I think I did see this occur at a recent, I was watching a 24-hour benefit event that was taking place in Chicago, and I feel like someone actually did do a land acknowledgement. So I may have to retract what I just said, but just to focus this upon you and what you're saying, mm-hmm. you took this upon yourself. Is this starting to feel like it's permeating mm-hmm. your group of friends and your colleagues? Like, are more people being more?
I think so. I mean, I hope so.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people aren't sure how to talk about it. And like for me, the best way that I knew how to talk about it was to like write narratives.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's as a resource, there's a website, nativeland.ca. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not actually. No.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I don't.
That's in Canada, you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I have come across it. It's not ringing a bell right now, but I appreciate mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
So yeah, it's like a map, and you can, wherever you're at, you can see who, you know, what Native folks were there long before you, you know?
Interesting.
And see the overlap and see this, the migration. And yeah, it's become a pretty big passion of mine. And I started working for the Eno River Association.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it kind of brought me into like land conservation and wanting to speak with the elders here about their experience, you know.
Yeah, but I pick up on, like, there are a lot of elemental aspects to the songs, and I picked up mm-hmm. on that. And I, like you said, I'm acknowledging a through line between what's in the liner notes and what mm-hmm. I'm hearing you sing about. And I mean, I think that's very commendable of you to do this, to use your space and your platform to talk about mm-hmm. these things, because at the very least, it's got us talking about it, and hopefully it gets others talking about it. And maybe in citing the website you did, you've maybe substantiated my feeling that for some reason here in Canada, we're really dealing with this as best we mm-hmm. can. And I apologize if I've denigrated any Americans who I don't see it. We live in our little bubble.
I think you're right. I came across a lot of the resources that I was looking to. We're based in Canada.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
We're just above you, and it is something. No, I didn't mean above you in terms of intellect or stature. I meant we're literally geographically just above you, and yet we're so mm-hmm. we're quite different, is something I've come to recognize. I have a lot of American artists on my show, and mm-hmm. I never think of us as being that much different, but as we're speaking, then I follow your electoral proceedings and all those sorts of things. And you're like, oh, they are a little silly. Like we act a little bit like your younger brother. We copy you because we have our own versions of Trumpism and MAGA here now. And it's not fun. And if you think about it, it's really this hell gate that has been opened by what's gone on in your country in the last, no offense, but in the last 7 years or so, we've just, everyone's sort of whatever. Anyway, all this to say, it's a really beautiful record. I feel like we've given people just a glimpse of it so far, but I hope this provokes them to actually listen to it. And as I say, really spend time with the lyrics. Is there anything more you want to say about it that we haven't covered? I want to give you an opportunity in case we, either I screwed something up and misrepresented anything, or If you want to highlight anything about the music or your collaborators, please feel free.
Yeah, you know, I would like to just name my collaborators. I think that would be something, you know, that would feel important to me and to them, because this record, it is the most personal narratively that I've written, and it's the most collaborative record. And you know, the approach was different in that, you know, I'm a Virgo, okay, and I like plans, but there was a certain challenge that I just leaned into of like, okay, we're gonna go into the studio and we're only gonna have 6 songs, and those other 4, we'll figure them out in there.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was surprising to me but I went with it. And, you know, what I came to understand that was a level of trust that I had with those collaborators and myself. So, Daniel Faust played drums, Luke Norton guitar, Casey Toll played the bass, and the co-producer engineer is Missy Thangs, and we've just developed a rhythm of working together. And like, this particular record was, I wanted to keep myself on my toes a little bit and be like, okay, we've got to have some more songs here. And it kind of pulled things together that were unexpected. I think what I'm hearing, a lot of the songs that people are gravitating towards were those songs that came from this, like, what should be this pressurized situation, but it was more like, what do you have in your bag? What do you have in your bag? Okay. Let's just see. Why don't we try that? And me, like, writing melodies on the spot. You know?
I was just talking about this with someone else, about how in all my experiences, the most prepared songs, when you're done the record, the songs you were most prepared for, you like them fine. But the ones that really stick out to you are those ones that you weren't so sure about and weren't as prepared for. Those end up being your favorites because they're a little miracle, because you have the sense memory of the experience of like, what is this song going to even be? We haven't finished this. And then you capture it, and it feels magical because it all worked itself out within that pressure that you're, even if you don't articulate it, it's there, right? So does that resonate with you?
Totally. Yeah. And the songs that, at least for me with this record, that I was not sure about, you know, the ones of the stragglers, the ones that were like needed the most attention, like Rose of Clover.
The one you mentioned,
it was really, we wrestled with it, and it didn't make sense to me for a long time, and then, yeah.
It's so interesting to hear that, because that's a song that has a pretty relaxed groove to it. You don't hear the tension, but I think that's sometimes the ones that feel in the pocket. In the end, you're just like, that was very satisfying that we pulled it off. And then that's interesting that I love that song. And
thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, no, it's all this to say, it's a wonderful record. I hope you're very proud of it. It sounds like you are. And
I encourage
people to check it out. As you can hopefully tell, there's lots of layers to it as well. It's not just a great sounding experience. It is intellectually stimulating, I suppose, as well. So,
Thank you.
My sweet spot. I like that. I like when something sounds good and provokes me to think about things. So thank you for this. Are you working on new stuff already, or do you have any plans that you want to share with us at this point?
Yeah, I started writing some new material, and I've been doing some co-writing for other folks and producing. Love collaborating, you know, whether it's like working on, you know, writing, co-writing, trying to co-write a country song, you know, that Tim McGraw might like, or, you know, writing some pastoral film score. Yeah. Like, I just, I love, not that I do those things every day, but, you know what I'm enjoying mostly right now is talking about this record.
Oh, good.
Because it's teaching me a lot, and I'm learning about the record through this experience.
Oh, good.
That hasn't happened to me before, yeah.
Is that because you haven't done much press, or that the you just didn't have this revelatory experience?
I think other records, I knew what they were about conceptually, and I knew how to talk about them, you know? And this record is just full of, I don't know, revelation for me. And you know, I'm experiencing it. We recorded it a year ago, started recording it a year ago. And, you know, a lot of the grief that I talk about and write about, I'm experiencing that in a different way.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing a different grief at the moment, you know? Mm. But, you know, these songs are still teaching me. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about any grief you're going through, but hopefully there's something, I don't know, that you can take away from that and learn mm-hmm. from. So, as I've said a few times, it's a beautiful record in many regards. If people want to learn more about you and Every Acre, I know it's out on Merge Records. Is there anywhere else you'd like to direct them?
Yeah, I have a website, hcmcintyre.com, and all my tour dates and thoughts and Patreon account. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the hub for me.
Okay. And are there tour dates as we're speaking, it's early January. Are there tour dates forthcoming?
We're in the process of tightening that up. But yes, there's definitely, we're playing a show opening for Bikini Kill in April and kind of building a tour around that.
Oh, nice. That is so interesting. I just had Kathy from Bikini Kill on the show.
Wilcox? Okay.
Yeah, Kathy Wilcox was on the show talking about her band, the Casual Dots, which mm-hmm. I don't know if you know them, but they're great. And
So
that's a small world. Weird. Very weird.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, okay. Well, people can go to hcmcintyre.com for more information about all the things H.C. McIntyre. Mm-hmm. If we can go out on a song from this album, mm-hmm. I wonder, I've given you short shrift. I've really only alluded to one. But if there's any song mm-hmm. you want to go out on, if you don't mind picking it and also telling us why it came to mind, I encourage you to do so. Is that something you can do?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe this is the first one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called New View, and it's a love song, and it's not, it's a song about courage and being willing and being open, and I think I need to hear that right now.
Okay.
So.
You need to hear that for yourself? Is that what you mean?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because when I wrote the song in a really different place, and so it hits differently, you know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. So let's hear it now. This is the first song off this beautiful new album by H.C. McIntyre. The album is Every Acre. The song is New View. H.C., this was a true pleasure and an honor for me to have you on this show and to spend some time getting to know you a little bit. Thank you for this, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you. I'm so happy to. I'm a big fan of yours, so this was great.
Me.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
HC is great. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with HC McIntyre. Man, thank you so much to HC for appearing on this, the 746th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One Podcast Network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com and also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at @vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at @vishkhanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. That's the primary source of revenue and probably the least icky. $6 American or more grants you access to exclusive content. You get the episodes a little bit earlier than everybody else, except for this one, which is probably going to come out around the same time because it's late and I'm tired and I couldn't get to it. But you also get other exclusive content like older interviews that I've done with people and sometimes bonus interviews bonus content, sorry, from these fresh interviews. And and it's just, like I say, it's supporting all the work I do with a little financial donation. It's flexible, it's monthly. If you do that $6 or more American a month, I would be happy to send you a Creative Control t-shirt. while supplies last. Just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one, okay? Thank you for supporting the show. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, too, to my friend Jim Guthrie for lending me some music on this show. You can learn more about Jim and his wondrous world of music at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with H.C. McIntyre. I hope you will check out H.C.'s music. Solo records are great. Mount Moriah is excellent. Great. Just great. And what a thoughtful person. I had such a warm feeling hanging out this way with H.C. and listening back to this conversation as I put it together for you. It was just fun. I appreciate H.C. So I hope you'll check H.C. McIntyre out. And also, subscribe to this podcast or follow it, and please tell your friends all about it, and let them know about it. Maybe they'll listen to it. Maybe they want to be on the show. I don't know. Maybe you got some friends that you think I might want to talk to. Do it. Just let them know. Spread the word about Creative Control if you can. If not, that's fine too. Just chill out. Just chill, man. All right. I'll talk to you very soon. Thanks again. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.